You're listening to Vatican Radio. On Easter Sunday, Pope Francis condemned an attack on Syrian civilians escaping from the civil war there, calling it the latest vile attack on fleeing refugees. During his Urbi et Orbi address to the city of Rome and to the world, the Pope prayed for peace throughout the Middle East, decrying especially the bus bombing which killed dozens near the Syrian city of Aleppo. Stephanie Saldana is a writer and teacher who is currently spearheading a project called Mosaic Stories, seeking to protect the endangered heritage of refugees, especially those fleeing from Syria and Iraq. She has lived for many years in the Middle East and is passionate about the need to protect the cultures that are disappearing as towns and villages are destroyed across the region. She has met with refugees in camps and churches, in subway stations and restaurants, both in the Middle East itself and in European countries where many of them have settled to begin a new life. She currently lives at the Tantor Ecumenical Institute in Jerusalem, where she shared some of her Mosaic Stories with me.
Actually, I often refer to this as a listening project because I really go out and try to listen to communities and find out from them what matters to them. And I've been really surprised. What matters to communities fleeing their homelands can often be things like vegetables, fruits, trees that they left behind. They can be religious communities. They can be, in the case of especially Iraq and Syria, languages. For example, Aramaic or Syriac, which is spoken there. It can be textiles. It can be soap. It can be all kinds of handicrafts. It can be wedding troops or wedding dancers. But one thing that comes up consistently, which can really only be captured in stories, are relationships. People miss the relationships they have, particularly between diverse religious communities that have been dispersed because of the war.
These are countries where people from different religious communities did live together in remarkable harmony.
Indeed. I mean, I lived in Syria, and you would find there, for example, Muslims and Christians visiting religious shrines together. I hear in my interviews over and over stories of longing in which Muslims talk about the way they would visit their Christian friends on Christmas, the way their Christian friends would come to visit them on Eid. Also stories about Yazidis, people longing even for the Jewish communities which have disappeared from Iraq and Syria. So it's a longing that comes up over and over again, more often than anything else I hear in my stories.
And yet you say today that has been completely destroyed and there is now in its place a kind of hatred.
Well, it really depends on who you're speaking to. In some communities, especially in Iraqi communities, among the young people, you do have this hatred which has grown because of the loss of their homeland. And in places like Syria, people still very fondly hold on to the memory of these relationships, even though in some places sectarianism has taken over. Part of the reason I want to collect these stories is because I feel like these memories will be essential to peace building. If people can only remember what happened during war and there's no collection of stories about the relationships that existed before, then people won't be able to think of the possibilities of building those relationships again in a post-war society.
So what are you doing with the stories that you collect? How are you, if you like, saving them for the next generation who perhaps can return to a more peaceful coexistence?
We have a website, we have a Facebook page, and we have, I lecture on the topics. We hope to eventually develop school curriculums around them. And one thing we're talking about is a kind of archive of stories, of interviews, of languages, of material objects such as soap or disappearing textiles or videos of wedding dancers. People often say that in exile, the second generation just wants to forget, and the third generation returns and wants to remember. So what we feel is essential is having a place to safeguard these things so that when that generation comes back and wants to remember, they'll have a place to locate these memories of the past.
often when refugees flee from their home country and they go to other host countries in the West, it's very difficult to preserve these memories because the host country doesn't want them to live in ghettos but wants them to integrate into their new culture.
Oh, indeed. And this is something that we find very, very often. When I spoke, to example, recently to refugees in France, they felt this struggle. They felt that there was extreme pressure on them to integrate into French society, and particularly for Syriac speakers, they felt that this meant that they couldn't speak Syriac, which endangered their traditional language. I spoke recently to a Syriac instructor from the city of Karakosh in Iraq. He's in exile in Jordan, and I asked him if he was teaching people Syriac, and he said, "Oh no, right now people, they want to learn French, they want to learn English. They're thinking about moving forward. They're not thinking about holding on to the past."
You talk about refugees wanting to bring some seeds, some vegetables. Are they the most unlikely things that we think of refugees wanting to take with them as they flee?
Well, I recently spoke to a woman from Iraq, and I asked her, when she came from Erbil, she originally went from Karakosh to Erbil, and after that she went from Erbil to Amman. I asked her what she brought with her, and it was a marvelous collection. She brought, for example, 1.5 kilos of spices for making biryani, which she knew she wouldn't be able to get in Amman. I heard stories in the north of Jordan of people bringing seeds for the small eggplants that they need to make makdous, which is a kind of stuffed eggplant which is loved in the village of Dara in the south of Syria. People brought material for sewing their traditional dresses. People brought earth from the shrines that they loved. I heard a woman, when I asked her what she brought with her, she listed some things and she said, "Oh, I wish I would have brought some earth." One woman, she brought a mete straw, which is a straw to a particular drink that they would drink around Homs, where she came from. She put it in her pocket at the last minute as a memory of her gathering with her neighbors and drinking it together.
What kind of hope do these people have for the future? Do they have any hope of going back to their own countries, or do they look to building a new life in their host countries?
It's very difficult to talk about refugees in any sort of general form. There are so many kinds of refugees. There are refugees who are poor and have really lost hope. There are refugees who are very educated and who are hoping to be placed in other countries and start over. There are those who just feel lost in the middle. And so you have all kinds of people. But about hope, really the common thing I heard is everybody is looking towards their children. Those who have lost hope for themselves are desperate to find solutions for their children, desperate to get their kids into school. Many of them, when I asked, "What was the moment in which you decided to leave?" the most common answer I hear is, "The moment I knew I needed a different life for my children." But the most hopeful story I've had was from a man by the name of Abdel Latif, who was from Homs. He was a driver, and he could no longer work because there were so many checkpoints that he couldn't move from place to place. Finally, he was forced out of his homeland with his family, and he came to Amman. And when I found him in his home, he had just started a garden. It was the first year he'd ever made a garden. And I said, "Why did you make this garden?" And he said, "Every day I woke up and there's nothing. There's nothing. I'm not allowed to work. I feel no future." And one day I woke up and I said, "I just want to make something. I want to do something with my life." And so he built the smallest garden with just a few onions, a few things of mint. And yet he told me, "Next year I hope that I'll plant tomatoes." And in that story, I saw just enough hope to keep a man and his family going through these difficult times.
My thanks there to Stephanie Saldana, founder of the Mosaic Stories Project.